Hello, you're listening to Market Matters, our market series on JP Morgan's Making Sense podcast channel. I'm Kate Finlayson from the FICC Market Structure and Liquidity Strategy team. And in today's episode, I'll be speaking with Eddie Wen, Global Head of Digital Markets. Eddie's team focuses on how we connect and engage in the market, the technology that we develop and leverage to automate workflows, optimize execution, and how we build and scale for the future of trading across all markets. So quite frankly, the best person for me to be speaking today as we discuss the changing execution ecosystem. Welcome, Eddie.
Hi, Jake. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, listen, Eddie, I think an interesting facet of the space that we work in is the view on how the execution landscape is shifting. So we have electronification across asset classes. We have the entry of new market participants and technological advances. And I guess within this, we also have a future look at how market participants will have to adapt in order to stay relevant and optimize in the face of rising costs. If we focus on electronification, just to start, looking at some of the asset classes that we cover in the space, so FX, spot, and then the movement of electronification in rates, and even credit where we see some advances, what are your thoughts on the evolution there and where some of these electronification trends can lead?
It's been a long journey, and as long as I've been in the business, the trading business have largely become more and more electronic over the years. And if you look back at the things that we predicted a few years ago about the general trend where the focus on credit is the area of accelerated electronification, I think that's largely played out over the years. We've seen the growth of platform volumes on single security bond trading across the various different channels. The dealers are systematizing much of the workflows and allowing the automation of price creation and also automation of the risk management of the various different portfolios that's being traded electronically. We also seen the rise on ETF volumes. More and more of our transaction volumes, the way we can package bonds and ship them through create redeem process to manage our inventory, has ETFs been critical for that. And thirdly, the portfolio trading business has also gone and it's grown significantly over the last several years. And all these things are interrelated as the market's electronifying, ability to interlink the various different electronic services as well as some of the voice capabilities we have on the various different trading desks. That's kind of created a virtuous cycle, essentially this acceleration across the different asset classes. I think the current focus for us is really drive the development of more tools to make this process easier for clients. The development of portfolio solution services, as well as various analytics and data tools that we're providing for clients, have been a big driver to help facilitate that move and make it easier for our clients to adapt to an electronified world. I think this trend will continue. I don't see an end to it, but I think the focus for the next couple of years, you'll see a continuation of credit, but also an expansion into other asset classes like derivatives. I know this is not just primarily FICC focus. This is starting to happen in like equity derivatives and also some of the derivative products in rates as well as in FX. You're going to see that acceleration across now the more complicated product types becoming more flow driven, and electronic trading will start happening with all asset classes as well.
So we have bilateral streams and an increase there, and arguably, I'd say a move away from central limit order books, CLOBs. And you've referenced this before. I think, Eddie, you've termed it this network effect, where you have bilateral connectivity with aggregation functionality alongside. What are your thoughts on this network effect and the impact of it?
I think we're a big believer of this network-centric e-trading model. If you look at the electronification of markets, the origination of the ideas is, well, we're going to put things on a central limit order book. However, what has developed over the years has seen that the concept of bilateral connectivity and really reducing the friction of transaction has been a big driver for increasing volume. So you see in a market like foreign exchange, a large majority of our transactions are happening through bilateral channels, right? Whether it's doing our single dealer platform or direct API integrations or going through a software vendor that helps us connect to various different clients for the services. That has the benefit of really reducing the cost of execution. But more importantly, it also allows us to custom tailor services to different clients for what they need. I think that type of network central model seems to be the direction of travel. You see the uptake in rates in US treasuries, building bilateral APIs. Credit is an area that we've been very focused on in driving bilateral connectivity with our clients and trying to figure out how to custom tailor client solutions to make that work effectively. These things do take time. And the challenge is that currently, everyone has a lot of software demands and the priority list for your IT management has been tremendous. So how do clients figure out how to juggle the various different technology needs that they have? How do you prioritize connectivity? And it's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem because it takes time for the dealers to get ready and for the clients to get ready. But ultimately, with the kind of growth that we've been seeing over the last 12 months, I think it's starting to turn the corner. The number of bilateral connectivities we have in credit doubled in the last year. So you could see that trend will continue for the foreseeable future. And over time, I think you're going to have this very different market structure where it's not just about trading on a particular platform or venue, but really it's like, how do you manage all the different electronic relationships you have with clients through APIs and service levels that you establish? How do you make that work properly? I think that's going to be the interesting development over the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. We see a lot of increased focus on that actually from market participants more broadly. Eddie, I mentioned a little earlier, this trading ecosystem had changed, that the market participants and the makeup of the market participants had also shifted. So whether that is alternative liquidity providers, systematic strategies starting to be deployed, for example, in credit, and even buy side looking to see where they can provide liquidity in certain circumstances. So with this in mind, how does this shape what we prioritize, how we innovate, how we interact in the market, and what solutions we provide for our clients?
I think the barriers to entry are definitely eroding between price transparency, clearing mandates, and capital constraints, resource constraints, and technology evolutions. A lot of these are eroding what is traditional benefits or strengths of essentially the sell side, right? A lot of the access to liquidity is now becoming more democratized. People can go to channels. Price discovery is no longer a huge challenge as they used to be. That has leveled the playing field. Now, but that said, I think the difference in the current market structure, yes, the barrier to entries are lower, but you also see the counter to that is how do you achieve the scale, right? A bank like JP Morgan has access to a lot of different customers. They service all aspects about the global financial markets and how we connect the various different clients together. That's partly the areas of strength, right, for a large bank. Smaller trading firms has the agility and speed to build, to connect and build various algorithmic enhancements that's very sophisticated. So I think the verdict's still out in terms of how the market and the playing field would evolve, but we do recognize that there will be a lot more competition in the space. And it's not going to just come from the sell side. It's going to come from trading entities. It's going to come from non-bank financial firms. So it's going to be an interesting market over the next several years, how they evolve.
Yeah. I think staying on the market participants, given the rate environment of late, we have noticed an increased participation in retail market participants and investors, perhaps accessing, whether it's through ETFs, separately managed accounts. And with that, obviously, smaller ticket sizes, more electronic trading through some of those channels. What do you think this increase in retail participation could mean for wholesale markets? Is there any knock-on?
The lines are definitely blurring. If you look at markets like ETFs, which traditional retail investors trade in equity markets, there's a classic place of blurring the lines. And there are benefits to that. Like I mentioned earlier about the ability for us to package inventory and do create processes on ETFs, that's helped dealer side on the institutional market be able to source that liquidity from what is a commingled field. So I could see over time that the concept between retail and institutional will blur. Now, obviously, as a bank like JP Morgan, we don't directly face off to the retail side of business, but platforms, intermediaries can help facilitate some of that bridging. I look back at the playbook and what's happened in the foreign exchange market probably about 20 years ago and the evolution of retail margin brokers that were prevalent in, say, Japan and a number of places around the world, they actually have been a leader for a lot of the technological innovations when it comes to streaming prices, trading on a platform. And those tools existed in retail long before they actually existed in the institutional side. And I think retail has this driving force that allows new ideas to develop very quickly and they adopt to new practices much quicker than the institutional players are. So there is something to be learned about how these tools have evolved. And I looked at some of the e-trading tools that's available for retail listed options. And I find it incredible how the capabilities of what's accessible for retail investors, in some cases, may be better than some of the institutional traders that sit on our trading floors.
Eddie, the digitization of workflows, provision of more electronic trading, ultimately leads to more data. And when we've looked at data analytics, certainly in the fixed income space, FX, et cetera, there have been many advances there. From our perspective at JP Morgan, how do we use increased provision of data and availability of data to optimize our business?
I think that that's one of the huge benefits you get from the electronification of markets is the amount of information and data that comes out of the various different systems that we use. Now, one thing to note, you mentioned about workflow, and I think it's important to also let the market understand that electronic trading isn't just something we are facilitating for our clients. It's actually something we are facilitating for our own sales force today. There are still clients who prefers to talk to a salesperson for execution, and we're giving those tools that's available to our clients, to our sales force. And that benefit of that is actually what was traditionally a lot of voice-driven activities now is being digitized, and we're gathering a lot of information about how we trade, how we service our customers. And as a result, between sort of pure electronic channel and as well as our internal voice channels, we now have a holistic picture about how every quote is being generated, how often do we miss, what's the level of competitiveness we need to be in order to win flows. And I think that's helped our business optimize itself in many ways. How do you tune the pricing to become the most competitive pricing agent on the marketplace? And that's really important for us to grow our market share. It's important to establish that client trust that they have on us, and also really understand how liquidity should be generated on these electronic markets that's been growing. Now, on the back of it, I think over the years, as we become more electronic in nature, the business doesn't stop evolving. It's not like building a system and the problem is solved. I think over time, as you gather more intelligence about how you're pricing, how you're risk managing, that allows you to optimize your business very differently. Now, over the years, if you look at the electronification process across many asset classes, they tend to have a function that breaks down historical silos. Like you look at foreign exchange in the early beginning, we used to have traders that would service one currency pair. Over time, you have machines that services all currency pairs together. So it allows you to exploit that information or correlation between different asset classes and different products. And you're much more efficient on how you hedge as a result of this. All this is generated from data that's kind of been provided to the machinery as you analyze sort of the correlation patterns across different asset classes, which have very strong correlation of risk. You now no longer need to hedge as much as you did, reducing your cost of hedging, which ultimately translates into cost savings for our clients, tighter bid-offer spread, and better liquidity. So I think the story around data, even though it's a side effect of the electronification process, and nonetheless a really powerful driver for us wanting to do more because we're learning a lot from the information that we have.
I think when we look at how our clients are assessing the availability of data, but also the technology they look to deploy and enhance, buy versus build, I know has long been a consideration, right? But when we have increasing cost constraints, priorities in terms of tech investment spend, how can that be approached, or what are your thoughts on how best to tackle that particular consideration?
This has always been an age-old problem, buy versus build. The reality is firms really need to think hard about what is strategic IP versus commoditized service that they can outsource. Now, increasingly, we're seeing software intermediaries that's helping us performing streamlining the connectivity process and help standardize certain protocols for communications, for example. And I think that is a trend that we will continue to see in the future as more of these what used to be a strategic advantage is actually better done through scale in a centralized entity. I think you're going to see the emergence of software standards or consortium-based approaches to build standard protocols that allow certain types of commonly done activities to be done in one place as opposed to everyone reinventing the wheel. And I think that ultimately long-term will help facilitate growth of these networks that we've been talking about for some time.
Eddie, my last question to you today. As we look to partner or work with various technology firms, what are we looking to accomplish from a market structure perspective?
Vendors really have the opportunity to grow if they can provide help the industry standardize on software solutions and make it easier for us to service our customers.
Seems straightforward to me. Eddie, thank you so much. It's been great to speak with you. We've covered a number of different elements. We know that the space continues to really throw up some really interesting observations. So thank you, Eddie.
Well, thank you, Kate. Pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks for listening to Market Matters. If you've enjoyed this conversation, we hope you'll review, rate, and subscribe to JP Morgan's Making Sense to stay on top of the latest industry news and trends. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. The views expressed in this podcast may not necessarily reflect the views of JPMorgan Chase & Co. and its affiliates, together JPMorgan. They are not the product of JPMorgan's research department and do not constitute a recommendation, advice, or an offer or a solicitation to buy or sell any security or financial instrument. This podcast is intended for institutional and professional investors only and is not intended for retail investor use. It is provided for information purposes only. Referenced products and services in this podcast may not be suitable for you and may not be available in all jurisdictions. JPMorgan may make markets and trade as principal in securities and other asset classes and financial products that may have been discussed. For additional disclaimers and regulatory disclosures, please visit www.jpmorgan.com/disclosures/sales and trading disclaimer. For the avoidance of doubt, opinions expressed by any external speakers are the personal views of those speakers and do not represent the views of JPMorgan.